As we move quickly down the stretch run, the Vancouver Canucks find themselves in a dogfight for a playoff spot. Battling teams like the Calgary Flames, the LA Kings, and other such dirty, rotten, stinking bastards. We at Pucked in the Head are going to talk about that right now. All right, Russell, how you doing, buddy?
A little rough, Jason, but I'll make it through.
I hear you you scored a few bucks at the poker table last night.
I did. I scored a few bucks and lost a few Z's, so I'll take the trade-off, but I'm struggling today.
I'm sorry. Our Canadian broadcast and podcast style guide calls for you to call them Zeds.
I apologize.
That's it? That's all you got?
Hey, like I told you, I'm tired. You're getting about 20% today.
Well, this ought to be good radio then. So we're going to talk a little bit about the Vancouver Canucks today. Straight up NHL hockey radio. I hear you went to the Flyers game the other night and caught the Pat Quinn tribute. So we'll get to that before we get to the playoff run.
Okay. Yeah. No, I did. I was in attendance. It's funny, actually. I ended up going to the Pat Quinn Ring of Honor induction night as well. Just lucky. It's not like I sought out the tickets for both of these nights, but just turned out that
way. Come on now, you have a shrine to Pat Quinn in your house, don't you? We are going to talk about the fact that Pat Quinn was a massive force on the Canuck and hockey landscape in this area.
Definitely. Probably raised the profile of hockey within Vancouver and the surrounding area more than likely anybody else, and has a lasting impact when you look at Trevor Linden and his position now with the Canucks. Just goes to show you the legacy that he has left behind in this area.
And not just Linden, but you look at guys like Pavel Bure, Hall of Fame guys like Pavel Bure.
Mm-hmm.
They say Pat Quinn was like a father to him. And he was, if he said Gino Ogic was like his brother, Pat Quinn was like his father.
Yeah.
And without Pat Quinn, Pavel Bure, with his mercurial personality, he doesn't do what he did during his career.
Well, and look, as soon as Quinn was gone and Mike Keenan came in, what happened to Pavel in Vancouver?
Yeah, and Linden, for that matter.
And Linden as well, yeah.
So just a huge figure, and not just physically, but as a personality. As soon as he walked in the room, people took notice.
Yeah, definitely. And let's not forget, too, we're not just talking about the NHL. He played a huge part in the Giants and their success.
Not the last couple of years, not, you, but definitely bringing the Memorial Cup here and winning the Memorial Cup, bringing the World Juniors here. He's one of the reasons that Ron Toigo made a go of the WHL in Vancouver.
Yeah, and I would bet as well that he probably played a part with going in with bringing Gordie Howe, which was also another big boost for the Vancouver Giants.
Although I do notice that Bobby Orr was not brought into it. I was very lucky to actually interview Pat Quinn about this a couple of years ago when they had Marcel Dion and Bobby Hull and a bunch of these guys all came to Vancouver for an event, and Pat Quinn was there, and I got to talk to Pat Quinn for a little while. I'll see if I can dig up the audio, because I don't even remember if we used it in a past episode of the podcast. But if I didn't, then
you'll be listening to it now.
You'll be listening to it now.
Hi. Jason Perrello, Pucked in the Head. Oh, I'm sorry.
Jason, thank you.
You've been asked this question a million times, but what is your biggest memory of being on the ice with Gordie Howe?
Well, the biggest memory didn't come in a game. It came in a practice when I was 18. I belonged to Detroit, as most of us did. In those days, it was pre-draft, so if you were raised in a certain area, one of the six NHL teams had established rights. Well, Detroit got every Hamilton kid. I was invited to the major camp in the fall of 58, I guess it was. No, it'd be 1960. And Gordy was, still a great player with Detroit at the time. late in his career, but his NHL career. When I got invited to practice with the big guys, which didn't happen too often. Usually you had practice with the other rubby dubs, you know, not the good players. So when practice was over, I went to go off, and he just yelled at me, "Where are you going, son?" And I said, "Well, practice is over." He said, "No, it's not. We got lots of work to do out here." And he pulled me back out and spent another half hour with me. And not only did he grab me, though, he grabbed Mihajlović as well. Big Frank was in a Detroit uniform then, and he made Big Frank work too. So I'll always remember that. As far as playing against him, No memory of any altercations of anything. I tried to play with great respect, not only because he was a tough guy, but you know what? He was a senior player and a great player, and while you always tried to compete hard against him, I didn't go beyond the bounds that I might have gone with other players, and nor did he do it to me. So,
You never caught a Gordie Howe elbow?
Never did. I did later on when we were getting together to become part of the ownership here with the Giants.
Yeah.
Again, it was off the ice again. So he'd get you in the alley or he'd get you on the ice, one place or another.
So you famously hit Bobby Orr one time.
Yeah.
Did you ever hit Gordie Howe?
Oh, I'm sure we did. Not that same way. Gordie didn't have that blazing speed. Like, Gordie just was in control of the puck, his control of his positioning. And I mean, you got to remember, when I broke in, he probably was, I would say, 15 years at least older than me. And, you know, he was winding down in his career. And he played a different game than Orr. Orr wound up, he'd hit that great top speed, and he left himself vulnerable a lot of times. Like, I mostly recorded just the one shot, but I probably hit Bobby Orr 10 times, not quite as severe as that one, but you never got Gordie like that. He was just too aware.
And there it is. That was my conversation with Pat Quinn, hockey builder, player, coach, GM, you name it, he did it. Took a few minutes to talk to a lowly blogger and podcaster like myself, and that pretty much typified Pat Quinn and his reputation around the hockey circles and around the community. I spoke to him 2 years ago at Gordie Howe's 85th birthday celebration, and that explains the Gordie Howe question. And, he died not that long ago, 71 years old. Rest in peace, Pat.
When I wish eyes are smiling, sure 'tis like a morn in spring in the land.
How was the memorial? I actually didn't watch the game, and I didn't watch the memorial ceremony, because I was out playing soccer with my daughter, and family
just couldn't
first.
Get back to
family
it. First. It's what Pat would have wanted.
Exactly.
I was impressed. You know what? It's very understated, which I think was fitting. Much like Pat, or at least from what I understood of him, is that he had a large, large presence, but he was never one to. He was not grandiose. He was very subtle in his demeanor, yet he would command the room. And that's sort of what I felt of the memorial as well. Much like when he first passed, and it basically was Mark Donnelly just singing "Oh Danny Boy." He again had a song, "These Irish Eyes Are Smiling." They had an Irish drum line.
And you got some audio of that from the game as well.
I do have some audio of Mark Donnelly singing.
And hopefully between the two of us, we actually get some of this technical stuff right. Because otherwise, we just shouldn't actually introduce stuff that we can't do.
It's likely that this isn't even recording right now. So, but yeah, I was impressed.
What's your name again?
Craig.
I knew it.
Yeah, I was impressed. I thought it was quick, it was succinct, and it was very fitting for him. And we would be remiss if we didn't mention the unveiling of Pat Quinn Way outside along the Gate 16 corridor, if you will, of Abbott Street. Dedicated to him as well.
Right.
Gregor Robertson was there. Francesco Aquilini was there, along with Barry McDonald was sort of doing the hosting, and Trevor Linden, of course. I was impressed and quite happy to see there was a large number of fans that showed up at 6 o'clock for that whole presentation to watch Pat Quinn's family in attendance.
And you got a nice shot of, it was Abbott Street, right?
Abbott Street, yes.
You got a nice shot of that you sent me that actually you called it the sun sets on Abbott Street.
Yes.
The only thing that we need now is a sunrise shot.
Over Pat Quinn yeah. Way.
But
maybe you could do that. You're a little bit closer than I am.
I'll see if I can arrange that for some. I'm not much of a morning person.
Yeah, me neither.
But we'll see if we can get that done. The Canucks, let's get to those guys. Should we call it a dogfight? Are they in a dogfight for a playoff spot?
I wouldn't call it a dogfight.
They're only, before this game against LA today, they are only 2 points up on LA, 1 point up on the Flames. And they are behind in points, both of the teams that hold wild card spots from the other division. So if the Flames and the Kings catch the Canucks, they're out.
They're out, yeah. The Kings have been, up and down, mostly down, I would say, this season. The Flames have turned into that little team that could never seem to give up, which is turned out great for them, not so great for the Canucks. But I just looking at the schedule moving forward, the Canucks have half of their games at home. The majority of their games are against,
they play Colorado. They play
easy-ish
Arizona.
Competition. I mean, but these are teams that they've struggled against as well. I mean, Arizona stole the points from them just a few weeks ago. But, I mean, they should be able to hang on to their spot. I wouldn't call it a dogfight. I would hope and I would expect for them to make the playoffs. And possibly, depending upon that competition, whether or not it is the Calgary Flames, they might even make it to round two.
Now, what is it, though, with the Canucks this year? They lose to Columbus. Mm-hmm. They lose to Buffalo.
Arizona.
They lose to Arizona, although they did get a point out of that last game in Arizona. They lose to Arizona. They lose to these bottom-dwelling teams. Arizona, by the way, now has slipped behind the Oilers.
Oh, wow.
In the Western Conference. Only the Buffalo Sabres have fewer points than Arizona.
That's
right
quite
now.
The feat in
that
and of itself.
Absolutely stunning. How are you worse than the Oilers?
Especially worse than the Oilers without Taylor Hall, even.
Yeah. They're just an awful, awful team.
Mm-hmm.
And in Arizona, where the only way you're going to get some people in the stands is to win a couple of games.
Right. Yeah. If that even. I'm not even sure that would draw in the fans.
Buffalo has obviously traded away anybody that could give them a hope of winning because they want to get this Connor McDavid.
Who? But sorry, who is that?
Buffalo.
No, the prospect they're after?
Buffalo.
Oh, right.
The Sabres,
yes.
The team in Buffalo.
And Connor McDavid.
Connor McDavid. Oh, and it looks like Vancouver is going to beat the Kings. As we are recording, it's the last minute of the game, and they've just scored an empty net goal.
See, these are the sacrifices that we make for you, the listener. This demonstrates our professionalism. If our lack of audio and technical expertise detracts from our professionalism.
We are so dedicated to bringing mediocre radio and podcasts to your ears that we refuse to watch the very games about which we are talking. we don't even watch the games that we're talking about.
That's a talent.
So it looks like the Canucks are going to, at least for the moment, gain a little bit of ground on the Kings.
Yes.
But why are they losing to these crappy, crappy teams? But they beat the Ducks. They beat the Kings. They beat the St. Louis Blues. They beat the Rangers. They beat the Hawks.
I wish I had an answer for you. If I did, I probably would be coaching the Canucks, or at least involved in the organization. Why do you think they're able to play up to competition and unfortunately play down to competition?
Well, they've actually had a very long history of this.
Yeah.
Even in the days of Marcus Naslund and Todd Bertuzzi and those guys, they were battling Detroit for supremacy in the Western Conference, and yet they would drop a decision against, at the time, a really poor Anaheim team.
Right.
This is, and they would have a classic game against the San Jose Sharks, who was winning, who were winning the President's Trophy that year. And then they would go and lose against the Calgary Flames, who were atrocious. So, they, I mean, they've been doing this for a very long time.
So do you think it's just bred into them then?
I'm personally, I wonder if it has something to do with the travel schedule. Is that something that, can we use that as an excuse?
I was going to mention that, but I don't know. You'd have to look into the schedule itself a little bit closer for that, whether they're coming off of a long road trip or flying from New York to Phoenix and then back
but
to
then
Vancouver.
You've got times when they, for example, this year they lost to Buffalo and then turned around and
exactly, yeah.
and won a big game against a big opponent mm-hmm. the next day.
Yeah.
So I don't know if the travel even factors into
I mean,
it.
I think there's always sort of a human element that goes into that where you tend to take the competition lightly if you know that they are well below you in the standings and they're not really a very good team. But that's sort of what separates the elite teams from the middling to good teams is the ability to put those opponents away and walk away with the points, take care of business, move on to the next one.
And there is the question mark of whether or not the really good teams are taking the Canucks somewhat lightly.
Right.
At times, because St. Louis is, you know,
a powerhouse.
They're a powerhouse this year. They're looking at possibly a deep playoff run.
Mm-hmm.
When the Canucks come to town, perhaps they're thinking about the next game or they're thinking about resting or what have you. Maybe the Canucks are doing the same thing. When they play Buffalo, they're like, they're Buffalo.
Well, and you look at a team like Calgary, where, I mean, it's all work ethic. If you have if the Canucks could play with that intensity night after night, minute after minute, period after period,
I would take it shift after shift.
Shift.
Because they do not put together consistent stretches of time.
Oh, definitely not.
I can't remember the last time I saw them put together a complete game.
Yeah. Well, and again, that, like you said earlier, that's seems to be their MO for years and years and years. I mean, I can't, maybe aside from the 2011 team, which was just rich with talent.
Even the fourth liners, I mean, the Rafi Torreses and the Manny Malhotras on the third line, like those guys, they brought an intensity.
Yes.
So that, yeah. And that wasn't, they were not talented.
No.
They were
good at what they had to do. But yeah, talent-wise was they were lacking, obviously. But I mean, that team as a whole, I mean, you look at up and down that roster. I mean, Malhotra early on in that season was performing offensively for a good while.
For a bottom six forward, definitely.
Definitely, yeah. Whereas now, obviously, I mean, I would argue now you look at the Canucks and they've got maybe the makings of one and a third of a top two lines, and basically their bottom six is more like a bottom nine. You got a lot of kind of those muckers and grinders, but I mean, they're able to score. Mathias has put together a nice season with 17 goals.
Although most of those came in the first half of the season.
That's correct, yeah.
Higgins was
16 or 17 points in the first 20 some odd games. And
yeah.
I don't think he's stretched that much.
But nobody
at all
expected
that.
Him to get 75 points this year.
No, of course not.
That's not sustainable for a player of his caliber.
But you would like to see more, regardless of what he's put on.
Mathias, I would like to see him get more than 2 points in the last 10 games, and both of those points came on empty net goals.
Right. Yeah.
Right. I'd like to see more out of him than that. Yeah. Even if it's 4 points and a couple of them come on like a shorthanded goal or comes, you know.
Well, and he's shown that he can.
Yeah,
and that's
exactly.
that's what is probably the most frustrating for fans to watch is him and Higgins for one.
Earlier in the season,
the goal he
scored against Colorado was
fantastic.
Beautiful. I mean, there was I don't even know if there was physically enough space for a puck to get through,
yeah,
and somehow he put it
yeah.
through.
And Bonino
amazing.
The same way. Bonino
exactly.
as well has shown glimpses of amazing scoring talent. But
the guy I'm really looking forward to seeing over the next couple of years is Bo Horvat. Because
yes.
With
yeah.
you know, only 13 minutes a game, a lot of
All right, we're back from the break, and Russell and I are going to try something a little bit different. In the past, we've talked about one topic for an extended period of time.
He's far and away their best faceoff, man. Which is amazing
Russell
for a rookie
on the
to
board.
Do that.
Yeah, poor right. guy. He goes in and edits.
We'll see.
And make
okay,
sure
do you think
the
Canucks make the playoffs?
We're going to try something a little bit different. We are going
round?
To, instead of having one topic
on their,
go way over time, we are going
to
try a bunch of smaller topics
to get
each
in,
individually
I
go
would
over
say
time.
That's a
so
matchup.
Here we are with our rapid fire segment called One Timers.
Probably not.
How do you feel about that?
Last question for this segment. If Ryan Miller cannot get some regular season games in, do you play Lack in the playoffs?
Yes.
Even if Miller's ready to go?
Yes. If Miller needs, I want Miller in at least two games prior to the playoffs to start.
Interesting.
Which supposedly he's not going to get in. He's not going to be back.
That is the word.
Playoffs.
He's not going to be. They have estimated he will be ready for the playoffs, but not before.
And heaven forbid should Lack go down and you have a Markstrom and Erickson tandem, then yeah, the Canucks probably won't make the playoffs.
And at that point, you are third in line for
I'm
throne.
Next on the call list.
That's right. All right, well, we are out of time. So thank you very much, Russell. It was great talking to you about the Canucks playoffs.
It's always special. It's great talking to you about the Canucks playoffs. So much for this organization. I feel like I've been treated a few times. And when you
promises, and we're probably not going to deliver on any of these.
Hopefully
so
one. If we're one for three, we're doing okay.
We are professionals. That's what we are.